like selling folks? Call the meeting of the regular meeting of the Oceano Community Service District Board of Directors for Wednesday, January 11th, 6:30 p.m. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Burney.
Here.
Director Angelo.
Here.
Director Colwell.
Here.
Vice President Austin.
Here.
President White.
Here. So we rise for the flag salute.
Attention, salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Now it's time for the agenda review. Does anybody have any changes?
To 7A, we have a revised copy that I handed out, and it has the addition of $100 to Matthew Guerrero for a board stipend and the removal of a GSI bill that we would like confirmation from the consultants and will be paid at the next board meeting once that's been confirmed. So if that would be
okay.
Amended to the agenda.
Okie dokie. Do I have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we amend as recommended.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Agenda review passes as amended 5-0. Public comment not on items not on the agenda.
Good evening and Happy New Year. I'm Julie Tacker, and I wanted to invite you, each of you, and your community to the California Coastal Commission tomorrow at the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors Chambers. There is an item that concerns Oceano, and that is the off-road vehicle operation that the state park runs along the beach. And I, again, invite you to participate. I hear all the time that Oceano incurs the impacts of the ODSVRA while realizing only minimal benefits from the ODSVRA. And I think this is where you want to take your concerns is to the Coastal Commission, as they are the permittee for the operation that goes on out there. This last fall, I brought to your board's attention, some of you are new, that the state parks is implementing a dust control project over the next 5 years that have two significant impacts that are unavoidable as part of their project. One of them being reducing the size of the riding area, the other being a, I kind of call it like a cattle guard. It's a noise impact. They're going to install these rumble strips at the exits of both Pier and Grand Avenue so that when the cars or vehicles drive over the rumble strips, the sand shakes off and doesn't become a source of dust as it comes into the community. Those rumble strips are going to make noise, and it's going to be a significant noise. And with million-dollar homes along the beach, I think that that would be something that your neighbors would oppose. I didn't hear anything from your board. I don't like to see you miss opportunities to stand up for your community. Again, with the Coastal Commission and the ODSVRA off-highway vehicle permit, this meeting at the Coastal Commission, and there'll be follow-up meetings. This is a place where you can make your concerns known. And again, I just wanted to bring that to your attention and invite you to participate.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there any other public comment? Seeing nobody come forward, move on to special presentations and reports. Tony? Mr. Maraschino?
Good evening, Board. Tony Maraschino.
Happy New Year. All right. So we had kind of a light crew throughout the holidays. I had some time off. The other guys had a little time off. But still we had work. 18 work orders, 7 USAs, 12 customer service calls. We had 2 after-hours call-outs. One was due to the lift station. The lift station, both pumps and impellers got clogged up. And it actually failed for a period of time. We got a high-level alarm, and Jason and Casey handled it swiftly, took care of it, pulled them, cleaned them, put it back online within a few hours, and back on track. About a week later, we had one of the other motors get clogged up. Just a reminder, this lift station is from 1964, and needs a little tender loving every now and then. But they are designed to eat up the material that gets down in there. But every now and then, people get some pretty heavy-duty rags and stuff. All right. We're continuing to do a lateral clean out. We're going through every home and inspecting them to see if they have a clean out on their property line and identifying them. It is taking a little bit of time. We basically got to go from house to house and verify if they have a lateral clean out at the property line so we can continue on doing the lateral program. All right. We had an angle stop break for Paso going to a residence. We went to go shut it off so they could repair a leak, and we had a replace the complete service line due to the age of it. But we did break it, so luckily it wasn't a plumber, not on them, which was nice. All right. So we also had an SSO happen, and it was on a clean-out, on a lateral. So there goes that program that we're trying to get going and prevent these from happening. And it was approximately 5 gallons of spilt, so it wasn't too bad. First of the month equipment checks, we had a fire flow we had to do. We're doing some flood watch, on the island and everything, ensuring our utilities aren't overflowing or anything with wastewater, this and that. Last year to date, we went just under 700 acre feet, which was 679 acre feet from state water. We pumped a little under 5 acre feet. And just to let you know, Lopez is at 26.7% full, which is 13,201 acre feet. So it's increased quite a bit. It's gone up approximately, last I looked, 6 feet. So
6 feet?
Yeah. So the inflow is there now. The ground is saturated, which is nice. Any questions?
What's SSO?
Sewer system overflow. Okay. So whenever we have our collection system, that's why we have our SSMP, our sewer system master plan, to go out and clean sewer mains. And we're also responsible for cleanouts from the property line to the main. Okay. So if it has a blockage in there and wastewater comes out, yeah, we have an SSO incident and it's reportable.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just a little bit of a follow-up. So, Tony, there's a couple of different levels of SSOs. And the most significant one is if a sewer system overflow actually makes it into a channel that could lead to a water body or gets into a water body, which then requires immediate reportable to the State Water Board. In the case of the laterals, like in 5 gallon type of a overflow, then the question becomes, did you contain it all and get it all cleaned up so that it doesn't, move off site very far? The answer is yes, but even those types of little efforts are still reportable. So we make sure to do all that effort. And
correct. You have sewer system overflows, one categories 1, 2, and 3. A 1 is regardless of the amount. If it gets to a body of water, the fresh water, storm drain that leads to that, that's the biggest no-no you can ever have. And a category 2 is anything over 1,000 gallons that does not get to a body of fresh water. The category 3 is out of a lateral. And that could also be a category 1 if it gets to a body of water. Fresh water, storm drain that leads there to the ocean. So the one is the one you really want to stay away from. And two, also, you know, 1,000 gallons or more is bad.
And then another just quick little statistic on Lopez. So this six-foot increase over the last week is really what it's been. And the storage went from just a hair over 11,000 acre feet to now, as Tony was mentioning, a little bit over 13,000 acre feet. So the six-foot increase is about 2,000 acre feet of water. And when you look at the graph, once Lopez starts, you know, the watershed starts releasing an inflow, we can kind of count on it to continue. That's just sort of the nature of the watershed. The more rain we get, then, you know, that inflow is going to continue to be good. So it's still mid-January, and we still have a lot of, couple months, you know, three months left in the rainy season. So at least the year is looking good so far.
I had one question. Did we have any trouble with manhole covers with the flooding? Have we had any going in there?
Water going into our sewer system?
Yeah.
We went out and patrolled the area, and we didn't see a whole lot of evidence of that. You know, if we would have, we would have sandbagged them and delineated them. But we did do our due diligence and our patrols out there.
Okay.
But two issues. Manholes have the little holes in them, you know?
Yeah.
And so those are already plugged.
Correct. We have put in wooden plugs in the island area.
Yeah.
We have put in wooden plugs in the holes that you can get to. And we've also used a expanding foam in other areas of the manhole.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
Because I know that was a problem in 2010.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the storm events, Tony was driving around in the middle of the night because they've already have the holes plugged in order to minimize any intrusion of water into the system. The other concern is that, of course, if everything gets covered, is those manholes can actually come off because the air in the system can float them, and if the water is moving, the water can actually take it. So if water levels get up, then Tony or Jason or Casey will then take the sandbags, put them down, and then put
delineation
over it so that people know that don't drive here, don't walk here, whatever. So,
yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I can present a real short. Five Cities Fire Authority is going to meet Friday at 10 o'clock in a specially called meeting. Most of the business focuses on, we're looking at a strategic plan. We're in the process of doing that, so I think that's one of the major things we'll be dealing with on Friday. So I'll have more information in 2 weeks. Thank you. Mr. Ogren?
Hey, President White, I have a few items to comment on. In terms of strategic planning, I'll be meeting on Friday with a consultant for South County Sanitation District. I think that the consultant is meeting with all the sanitation district board members and then the city managers for AG and Grover, and my meeting with him will be on Friday, and I'll see what kind of questions he has to ask, but that's on Friday. Secondly, on the county the projects that the county is implementing where we have to do utility relocations, the Highway 1 drainage project as well as the Air Park Drive Bridge replacement project. The first reimbursement agreement will be on your agenda for next week. Legal counsel and I have been going back and forth with the county a lot on that, and that project or that agreement is in its near final form, so it will be on the agenda next week. And then a couple of quick little announcements. One is, in addition to the coastal hearings, tomorrow night, Pismo's Visitor Tourism, not exactly sure, is hosting a social forum with the coastal commissioners. And so called over and checked, and all the board members are invited. If you're inclined to go, just let me know because I need to confirm with the city sometime tomorrow morning. But the start time, and I can provide, you know, more information, is 7:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. If their meeting goes longer, then the start time is going to be later, but it's the later of 7:30 and when they get out of their meeting. So all the board members have been invited, and I just, you know, maybe at the end of the meeting, give it some thought. If you're interested in going, let me know. Obviously, even if you say you're interested and you don't go, there's no fines or anything like that, so that's okay. I just want to get back to the city in the morning in terms of who may be interested in going. And then, not sure how aware the board is, but Habitat for Humanity is working on some efforts, starting up some efforts in the community. And they were hoping that I could announce that they have a program to help with, like, cleaning up any of the houses that might get flooded. The guidelines is that they are able to assist homeowners who are in the 30 to 60% of the median household income for the county. And so if anybody got flooded, needs some cleanup efforts, if they call the CSD, 805-481-6730, again, our number is 481-6730, but we can help, you know, connect them with Habitat for Humanity, who, again, is doing some outreach to help with property owners who might need some cleanup if there's been some flooding. And I know that there's been, I've heard of at least one house that had flood waters coming into it. So I wanted to make that quick announcement on behalf of the Habitat for Humanity. And with that, just follow up with the other agenda items.
Okay, we don't have anybody from the Sheriff's Office here, so we move on to Board of Directors and outside committee reports. Director Caldwell.
I had no outside committee appointments this week.
Must be December, huh? Okay.
No good Christmas parties, even.
Vice President Austin?
Well, yes, I attended the last Wednesday's meeting of the South County Sanitation District. And the main item on the agenda was the recycled waters facility study, planning study. And so we had a presentation by the staff and the consultants for the study. And a little background on this, it was brought up due to the drought. The member agencies, they were looking at opportunities and options to supplement their water supply portfolios. So one option is the potential to capture wastewater currently being discharged to the ocean, treat it further, and return it to the community for reuse as recycled water. So in 2015, the district received a grant from the State Water Resources Control Board to conduct a study. And the grant became, it changed a little bit, just to shorten it up, but it was for $75,000, and the cost of the whole study was $150,000. So the match was split between the district and the city of Arroyo Grande. So the study was just completed, and the firm Water Systems Consulting were at the meeting, and they presented the study. So what it focused on was the evaluation of the engineering and economic potential. There were two options for an advanced treatment facility, either at the district, at the facility, or at an off-site location. So it also explored, evaluates the various types of recycled water to be provided, because there could be recharge the groundwater or injection by recharge by injection or agricultural irrigation cost and distribution. So they recommended there were on-site and off-site alternatives. And the on-site to do this on the site where the current plant sits, the pros would be, of course, there'd be less infrastructure required and there'd be no additional cost to purchase property. But the biggest con on that one is the regulatory constraints with the Coastal Commission and the location of the plant itself. And then on off-site, of course, you'd have fewer constraints, but you'd have the cost of more infrastructure. So the recommendation was to move forward with the environmental impact report that evaluates both on-site and off-site options. And the copy of the whole study is on the website for the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. So if anyone wants to read all of it in detail, that's where you can find it. And that's it.
Thank you. Director Angelo? Well, you're still signing checks, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Director Brene?
I also have nothing to report.
And Director White also has nothing to report. That was quick. Okay. 6C, public comment on special presentations and reports.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I too attended the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. And I think it's important to let everyone know that those meetings are going to be in Grover Beach for the next 6 months or so. So that's a change that's come forward. With regard to the water systems consulting report, and I do encourage your board to read it, it identifies, it kind of puts a price tag to what these possibilities may be, and it's pretty steep. And that's what I've been before this board before. Again, some of you are new and maybe don't know what my concern is that there is a $20 million project on the table for the sanitation district right now, and then you would be adding this on top of that. They would, not you. Someone would. I don't know who's going to pay for it, to be perfectly honest with you. But it's borne by the ratepayers, of course. And earlier we talked about flooding and the sensitivity of that site to sea level rise, tsunami run-up, and the fact that the plant is 50 years old. When Ms. Austin pointed out that the infrastructure would be less expensive because it would be on-site if they chose an on-site option. Most of the infrastructure is very old and would need replacing, and that's actually something that may get opened up in the redundancy project and drive the cost of that price up. If you read the permit application, it speaks very clearly to that potentiality that there may be more costs incurred because of the high groundwater that these pipes have been sitting in for some 50 years. Just last year, a $300,000 pipe replacement for a very short piece of pipe at that site. So what I've asked, and I will ask, I'll continue to ask until I see your board take some action on this, is that you have the conversation about whether or not your three communities, starting with Oceano that's been the host of the plant all this time, your communities need to talk about moving away from the ocean. And that site is costly. It's in your rates to maintain it. And now may be the best time to consider taking all projects off that particular property due to the sensitivity that it has.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Board of Directors. Mary Lucy Oceano. I was able to watch the sanitation district on the computer, and I was so happy to see finally the progress of moving forward and the feasibility study in, and now I think that real discussions can happen. I also had a chance to listen to staff reports, and so I would ask your board representative to the sanitation district to follow up on a test that was conducted during the storm. It was one of our first major storms of the year, and I'd just like to know more about it because we speak of the age of the plant, but they stress the plant to 7 million gallons. And so is it fragile, or is it really kind of just like robust but old, you know? So, but the question I have is, I guess, the safety of running those types of tests during the first storm of the year. And then and then also, Mr. Ogren, I want to ask you about Lopez. My understanding is Lopez was, before the storms, was at 21%. Then it went to 23% after the first storm, meaning there's 23% water in there, or there's 21% water in there. Now we're saying there's 27% water, which would be an increase of 6%, right, increase. But this dam is not going to act the same as when it was built. The big, you know, story is that it filled very, very rapidly, very, very quick, you know, and everybody was also surprised. But now we have about 30,000 more straws in that dam. We have more entities pulling off it. So 6% increase, I don't think it means the same as when we filled the dam. And we have to keep in mind that there is way more draws off that dam than there was in the past. So maybe one of the tech meetings could take that up or think about it. And then also, too, my last question to the board would be, is that was it Measure J or G that was for the roads? Which one was it? Was it J? Okay, so with the failure with Measure J and the percentage of those funds going to the project, to the 13th Street project, and of course we all know that, you know, people actually stalled this time, and the reporter was in the water up to her breasts. And so we know it's getting very, very deep there, right? So without that initiative measure going through, is that project a reality, or is it just back up on the shelf? Thank you.
Could you please answer that?
Yeah. My discussions with the county is that they have secured the funding to do the drainage project. My understanding was that Measure J had funding for the road project, the Highway 1 project, which is being called the revitalization project. And as far as I know right now, they do not have funding for the revitalization project. But my understanding is they do have the funding for the drainage project. With respect to the dam and certainly TAC, seeing a 2,000 acre foot increase in storage in the reservoir is like kind of exciting, because we're actually seeing water flow into the reservoir. The grand scheme of things, though, it's still pretty insignificant, right? The safe annual yield of the reservoir is supposed to be about 8,700 acre feet per year. So we still haven't even seen inflow that would match that. But the way that Lopez responds is it needs these kind of storms. It's starting to respond, and then the hope is that we're going to get, you know, some more good rain through the end of the rainy season. But 1969 was a unique year with the 100-year storms that hit right as the dam had finished construction. And I think everybody would hope for something more than we've gotten so far, but not as much as that in 1969. So we'll keep our fingers crossed and see how it goes.
I'd like to follow up, too, just with regard to Ms. Tacker's comments on the sanitation district. I wanted to know, too, if there's been any talk with regard to this study and presentation that was done for the on-site, off-site for reclamation. The possibility of, is it being factored into with the redundancy project, that if things are looked at with the reclamation and the cost associated, that potentially they would move the whole redundancy, or further discussion?
So if it's, we can address this in greater detail during agenda item 8A. Because the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project is part of that agenda item. And I can certainly address some of Ms. Tacker's comments at that time as well.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Should we move on to the consent agenda? And there again, we have more public comment.
Okay.
Julie Tacker, and all I was going to say is that I'm missing that you don't have minutes for December 14th because I was not at that meeting, and I was hoping to catch up on that.
And we had multiple illnesses that affected the number of items we got on the agenda today, so they will be on the next meeting's agenda.
Okay, let's. Is there any more public comment? No. Should we consider the consent agenda?
And like in doing so, the appropriate motion.
As amended?
Yes.
Yes. Has everybody considered it? Did somebody make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent agenda as amended.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? The consent agenda passes 5-0. Okay, move on to public, to business items. 8A.
Yes.
Can I maybe say what we're doing? Consideration of recommendations to support the advocacy platform on state water and reclaimed water efforts by other local agencies, and consideration of a letter of intent provided by the City of Pismo Beach for a regional groundwater sustainability project, which is abbreviated RGSP, another abbreviation that we're going to have to learn. Thank you.
And I might even throw out a couple more tonight, but test you at the end of the meeting. Quick clarification, though, public comment on the business items. My recommendation is to take public comment on each of them individually.
Right. After.
Yeah, after.
I'm sorry.
Just the. So, President White, members of the board, item 8A has been prepared to support two important water resource efforts being led by other agencies. And in the attachment is a water resource advocacy platform, or a WRAP. The concept of an advocacy platform kind of comes from the concept of legislative platforms that other agencies adopt, larger agencies that are lobbying in Sacramento or in Washington, D.C. on legislation. And obviously, Oceano CSD, we don't have the scope of work and other things that would justify state or federal lobbying. But we do have a lot of interagency relationships with our neighbors, and so having an advocacy platform on how we support some of these other efforts, I think, is an important. In a sense, there's two different items, two different efforts. The first effort is a program utilizing an existing project, and that's the State Water Emergency Program that's being developed by the county. And the second effort is the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, or RGSP, which is being led by the City of Pismo Beach right now. And what I would like to do is just take them one at a time, and I'll do some, especially on state water, I've got some brief comments, and then open it up for discussion. But the written staff report and previous reports to your board describe this state water emergency program that the county is implementing as a two-phase approach, where the first phase is the county establishing agreements with the State Department of Water Resources, which owns and operates the State Water Project, and the Central Coast Water Authority, which is the operator in Santa Barbara County on behalf of Santa Barbara County agencies. And that first phase is necessary so that the County of San Luis Obispo has the ability to bring some of its excess state water supplies from the rainforest of Northern California to here on the Central Coast. In summary, there's about 11 state water subcontractors that have contractual rights to about 11,000, but just over 10,000 acre feet of the county's 25,000 acre foot per year allocation. So this emergency program is intended to look at that excess allocation of something under 15,000 acre feet, and to what extent might that be able to help out agencies with emergency needs. So phase one, again, is that the county has to develop the agreements with the Department of Water Resources and the Central Coast Water Authority to enable, give it the ability to bring some of that here locally. Phase two are the local agreements that would provide for the delivery of that excess or emergency water to specific local agencies with emergency needs. And the focus of the advocacy platform is to promote amendments to the contracts, the existing contracts between the county and local agencies, such as Oceano, to provide for the emergency program. And so why are contract amendments necessary? Well, the existing agreements have provisions that require uniformity of agreements. And so when the 11 subcontractors locally executed agreements with the county in 1992 and 93, there's the provision that says all the agreements have to be uniform. And, you know, we've reviewed this and discussed it with legal counsel previously. But because of that provision, it, you know, our belief is that the county doesn't have the freedom to just go and develop emergency agreements with other agencies as they may choose to do, but that they actually have to work with state water contractors. And essentially, there's two options. One is the waiver option, which is where the 11 subcontractors would look at the program that the county has developed, and if they're satisfied with it, they could adopt waivers that say, yeah, despite our contractual provisions on uniformity of agreements, you, the county, will okay if you go and do this emergency water program to other agencies in need. And the second approach is through contract amendments. And the reason why I'm recommending the contract, a couple reasons why I'm recommending the contract amendment approach at this point in time, is that over the holidays I was able to sit down with Mark Hutchinson, who is leading the efforts with the County of San Luis Obispo. And what is something that we all need to recognize is that even though we're dealing with the current drought, and you know, hopefully we get a lot of rain this year and the need to bring in emergency water is mitigated, but the need's going to reoccur. We all know that you know, the cycle of droughts in California isn't something that's associated with global warming. You don't have to have, you know, a belief that global warming is happening or not happening. Cycles of droughts in California have been around for a long time. And even when we get through this one drought, there's going to be another one that follows it. So to have the ability to establish contract amendments means that even in the future, that the program can be implemented without, you know, a lot of contractual constraints. That's attractive to the county because out of 11 subcontractors, if they have to go and get waivers every time they want to implement the program, it can be problematic. Not only do people change, but the different agencies have. So one of the subcontractors is the state of California because of the men's colony. And to get anything through the state of California can be a challenge. And then some of our other locals are private entities. They're not all public agencies. And so perceptions of what to do in emergencies can certainly be different. The idea with contract amendments is you work through it, you figure out the program, and then once the contracts are amended, then we've got the rules so that the emergency water program can work in the future as well. The issues are still going to be substantially the same, and as long as we're working through the issues, let's work through contract amendments. There's certainly going to be devils in the details. One of the areas of optimism is that on the Nacimiento contracts, the county does have contractual language with the Nacimiento participants regarding potential resale of water and how to take excess Nacimiento water and move it around. And that would be a viable option in the South County during the drought if there was pipelines that could actually deliver Nacimiento water down here. But that infrastructure doesn't exist. Versus in the state water project, the infrastructure already exists. So certainly support contract amendments. And the last reason is that in going through the scrutiny of contract amendments, that's where I have the highest degree of confidence that all those devils in the details are going to really be addressed. And right now there's different opinions as to how to approach it. But when you go through a contract amendment process, it's a, you know, it's a due diligence process. It's going to include all the attorneys, and it will get done right. The two issues that I identify that I think are especially important to Oceano CSD are one is equitable pricing. So if emergency water is sold to another agency, that pricing needs to be equitable, and because of all the subcontractors have been paying a lot of money over a lot of years, including some years where we have reductions in the amount of water that's available to us. Equitable pricing is important. And the other side then is that there needs to be some equitable revenue sharing between the county and the state water subcontractors There's a lot of, again, devils in those types of details. Underneath the revenue sharing concept, and I didn't want to get into too many details in the advocacy platform, is part of the discussions is going to include, hopefully, that if a program is developed and somebody goes and asks the county to be able to purchase some water, existing subcontractors should have a first right of sale, so that if we have a couple hundred acre feet that we would want to sell through this program, that we would be able to do so. Hypothetically, let's say an agency went to the county and said, we want to buy 2,000 acre feet of emergency water, then the county would turn to the subcontractors and say, okay, do you have any, we might say 200 acre feet from Oceano. And the buyer, I think it should really be invisible to the buyer, that if they're going to buy 2,000 acre feet from the county, they know what the pricing is, they know what the terms are, and then if Morro Bay or Pismo Beach or Oceano want to contribute some water to that sales, then we should be able to do so. But I didn't specify that in the advocacy platform because, again, don't want to get into too much detail. Those details need to be addressed during contract amendment discussions, but I just consider that to be sort of underneath the revenue sharing. And then finally, as a bit of a side note, I know one of the issues that the county is wants to address during this process is the criteria which would be required for an agency to actually obtain the emergency water. Are they conserving? Is the community, you know, doing best efforts to conserve? I talk about, are they diligently pursuing a supplemental water source? Because if they need emergency water, then they should be diligently pursuing a supplemental water source. But on the issue of how much should the agencies be conserving and what kind of criteria might exist there, again, a detail beyond this advocacy platform, but the idea that the state has mandates and guidelines on conservation during the drought, and it seems to me that as long as there an agency is complying with those and diligently pursuing other sources, because if locally we were to impose conservation greater than what the state is, the challenge is that conservation droughts create economic damages. And if an agency says we need emergency water, we're complying with all the state mandates, then there's a little bit where, you know, let that agency determine how much they're going to buy and how much they're willing to spend, because then, you know, especially if it's one of the cities, they have to weigh and balance how much are we going to conserve versus how much are we going to pay to get additional water in order to avoid economic damages. So that's a little bit of a flavor of some of the discussions that I anticipate we're going to be having. But I wanted to make sure that the advocacy platform, one, says that Oceano supports the development of the emergency program. We'd like to see contract amendments, and pricing and equitable sharing of revenues are our primary concerns. And with that, I'd be glad to answer questions on the state water component of the platform.
I really liked your comparison of the waiver versus a contract amendment. Oh. That waiver process would really bog things down.
Yeah. Yep. As a little bit of a note, when I happen to be the individual who led the negotiations on the Nacimiento contracts, and it was interesting because, you know, Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo were always in the room, and historically they didn't like each other very well. But they were dedicated to making sure that that project happened. But a big portion of the discussions were exactly about the resale of water and what those conditions might be. When the state water projects contracts were negotiated in 1992 and 93, that really never surfaced as an issue, in part because the Department of Water Resources, all the contracts with the state of California, with DWR, between DWR and the county, included a ton of, they kind of constrained what was going to be negotiated. And the history of state water was that it was only as a, for a permanent supply. So in 92 and 93, nobody really gave a lot of thought to, hey, how might we develop an emergency program within the context of state water? Also in 92 and 93, nobody knew how much different agencies would contract for state water. So the idea that there was going to be something like 15,000 acre feet of excess allocation really didn't, you know, sink in until all the contracts were done. But, you know, a few years pass and we're working on the Nacimiento project, Well, you look back and you say, gosh, it would have been nice if we could have done something in state water. And so we started working on those concepts in the Nacimiento Agreement, and now we come full circle around and say, okay, how might we be able to take some of the provisions of Nacimiento and incorporate them into the state water project?
I'm hoping that being now that it's raining, I hope this doesn't fall by the wayside or get put back for another year or get buried. I'm hoping it can be pushed
through
because this year, because it's going to take till next year anyway. You know, all the negotiations and getting the signing on the dotted line is going to take another year.
And I think that... well, you know, that's always a concern, and that's the same concern with the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project, that if we get good rain this year and for a couple years, then, you know, the concern is always that that motivation of moving forward and securing additional water resources all of a sudden goes by the wayside on both of them. My inclination is to believe that this drought has been a wake-up call for some people and that, you know, the diligence is going to be maintained. If we get the rain, there is, you know, to me, the silver, there's only good news, I guess, if we get the rain. To the extent that contract negotiations can identify some real specific challenges, if timing is not as critical, then it gives us the opportunity to really work through those issues. The more critical timing is, the more that challenge it is to get through disagreements. So
yeah.
I think that your comment, President White, of maintaining diligence is very important. I'm a little bit hopeful for multiple reasons that we get a lot of rain, but it also will help the negotiation process in terms of making sure rational minds are, you know, staying focused on how to develop a good program.
Yeah. Thank you. Anything else on that part of it? Move on to... Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project.
Okay, so the second significant water resource effort that our local agencies are working on, and it's the Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. And the advocacy platform recognizes the need for the sanitation district to really take a leadership role with the city of Pismo Beach. And hearing Vice President Austin's report and the sanitation district boards recognizing that working on supplemental EIR is important, is certainly a step in that right direction. Before I go any further, I want to make sure to acknowledge and the efforts of the city of Pismo Beach, because the city so far has certainly taken the leadership role on the project. They've expended about $1.5 million or committed about $1.5 million out of city coffers to move the project as far as it has moved so far. And their work efforts and the meetings I've attended, again, I think that they're identifying the issues that need to be identified, and there's a lot of unknowns and work that still needs to be done. But it's the sanitation district and the city of Pismo Beach who are the two agencies with the jurisdiction and control of wastewater flows, treatment, and disposal. And that's key because from a standpoint of OCSD, you know, we don't have any control on those wastewater flows right now. And we need to really understand what is the sanitation district going to do and how are at least the initial relationship between the sanitation district and the city of Pismo Beach, how's that going to happen, and then how might it evolve? And so there's a lot of different ways that this project might end up morphing. Those details are simply going to need to be worked on. So first thing I want to do is to address the letter of intent that the city has sent to us. The letter includes some broad-reaching approach, and it identifies some very important details, but in reviewing it with legal counsel, we do have some concerns, and so I'm going to have legal counsel speak to that letter of intent, and then I'll come back to the advocacy platform and talk about the project and some of my most recent conversations today with Ben Fine of the city of Pismo Beach and some of what the city's needs are in order to make sure to move forward with next steps, because ultimately I think we need to be supportive of some of the next steps, but at this point in time I want to make sure to let legal counsel address the letter of intent.
President White and directors of the board. So Mr. Ogren did identify the fact that he and I had sat down and we've gone through the letter of intent. And while there is general support from the general manager in regards to the City of Pismo's efforts, we do have some concerns about the way this letter of intent is drafted. And it's not a contract per se, but when you sign a letter of intent, it's I guess I would call it something like almost a quasi-contract in the fact that it's going to create reliance. And as soon as we put the City of Pismo in a position where we create their reliance on certain things we're going to do, then we do have obligations and there's legal rights and remedies that accompany that. In particular, the letter of intent as drafted says that we are committing to actively participate in workshops and efforts to define benefits and develop future agreements. It also provides our commitment to reimburse the City of Pismo for a respective portion of groundwater model development and costs that are not reimbursed by the South County Sanitation District. It also provides your commitment as a board to pay for non-reimbursed progress project costs that are what they say to be shared based on a proportion of benefits. And so, again, echoing what Mr. Ogan said, anytime you have an agreement, the devil's in the details. We have to look at what we're committing, and this is so broad, the way it's written, that we can't really readily identify what we can. It's easier to identify what they want us to do, but what they want us to pay is too vague in this for me to recommend to your board. For example, when you have an agreement that we're going to reimburse for project costs based upon the participants' apportionment based on the benefits to the parties, well, how do we know what our benefit is? What is our benefit? How do we apportion that? If we don't know that in advance, it's very difficult to understand what it is you're going to pay. Is it a third? Is it a half? What do they think the benefit is? And who decides? Do you decide or do they decide? So it's issues like that that make me have concerns about this letter of intent, the way it was drafted and presented to your board. And so I think to the extent that there's going to be some sort of agreement to reimburse costs, if that's where you want to go, I think we have to be very careful to understand those in advance. Is there any questions?
It's like a catch-22. In the letter of intent, there's obviously a vagueness in it because mm-hmm. you can't determine what the benefits are now. I mean, even if everybody wanted to.
Right.
Yeah. And I think the catch-22 is a good way of characterizing it, because in some ways I think that Pismo Beach feels like they're also stuck in that, right? I mean, they're taking a leadership effort. They want to see a commitment by other agencies so they're not out there on their own, taking all the fiscal risks on their own. And yet, how do you sort of coordinate these? How do you get it together? And part of the comments today, or public comment, is, you know, what is this going to mean in terms of fiscal implications to the CSD? So the thing is that the letter of intent, even though we're not at the place where we can recommend support for it right now and want your board to certainly consider it, we're also not in a point where we want to reject it by any means.
Right.
Right? And that's kind of a good portrayal of we're in a catch-22. We don't see ourselves supporting it and executing it right now, in part because we don't have the same water resource needs as some of the other agencies, right? We're in a pretty good water resource situation, and so why kind of take those risks? but we still need to be supportive. And so how do we find that middle ground? Well, in summer, it's those unknowns, really, that create the basic issue of what might be the unintended consequences if approved right now. The advocacy platform then turns, and part of the idea there is, what are the next steps? Because as we move through next steps, some of those unknowns are going to start becoming known, right? So if we can support next steps without incurring any significant risks or any significant financial burden, then we should do so. And certainly that was part of the feedback that I got from Ben Fine, again, the Pismo Beach Public Works Director, and the needs of the city, because the two next steps are the Supplemental Environmental Impact Report. And so the advocacy platform is recommending, I think consistent with what the Sanitation District's review was last week, of that supplemental EIR work really needs to be worked out between the Sanitation District and the City of Pismo Beach. And so this advocacy platform would essentially say yes, you know, and our representatives to the Sanitation District are being directed to go and work on that and help to make that coordination happen between the Sanitation District and the City of Pismo Beach. And my discussions with the Sanitation District's administrator is that he also thinks that some sort of an agreement, even if it's a basic agreement, needs to be done between the Sanitation District and Pismo, as opposed to just the letter of intent. So I think we're all on the same page in terms of moving the supplemental EIR work into the Sanitation District's forum. One of the benefits, of course, is that everybody's paying for it then, because the Sanitation District ends up collecting revenues from, you know, the three communities, and then, of course, there's Pismo as well. So the advocacy platform will support the next steps associated with the supplemental EIR. The other next step that's crucial right now is the additional groundwater evaluations. So part of what Pismo has done through their work efforts is to evaluate what is the groundwater situation and how would injection of recycled water of Pismo flows occur. And so now it's, well, how would that work with the additional flows from the Sanitation District? And the good news is that the Supplemental Environmental Program funds, the SEP funds from the Regional Board, which were generated from the fines from the Sanitation District, but they're about $221,000, are being dedicated to that specific purpose. The scope of work of that additional groundwater evaluations and the fee estimates on that are going on right now, and the discussions with the Regional Board are going on right now. And in general, people are optimistic that the Supplemental Environmental Program funds, the SEP funds, are going to cover those costs, and that there will ultimately be no fiscal implications for any of the communities to do the additional groundwater work. But Pismo is concerned of, well, what if that goes sideways for one reason or another? And they don't want to be, you know, holding the bag on all of that cost. So there's two risks with the approach. And I think that in order to mitigate Pismo's concerns, it might be that we need to come back at a future date in order to address agreement specifically associated with the groundwater evaluations. I'm going to make a side note is that, you know, we're all parties to the Santa Maria groundwater litigation. So whether there's a recycled water project going on or not, we need to understand our groundwater basin better. The good news is that the SEP funding is going to provide $221,000 and change specifically relating to groundwater issues on recycled water. And then we've got another $500,000 lined up, $250,000 from the county and $250,000 through Zone 3 in the county as well. So there's another $500,000 in order to support groundwater modeling efforts. A total of $721,000 has been allocated to help. So the fiscal risks of us entering into an agreement with Pismo that says, hey, we're all in this groundwater modeling together, and the fiscal risks are pretty limited. But I want to characterize them in two different ways. One way is that we all come to a concurrence with the Regional Board on how the SEP money is going to be spent and cost estimates are developed, and then they award the money to Pismo Beach, and Pismo Beach hires the consultants, and then the Regional Board's not happy with the work. And the Regional Board says, you didn't do what you know, we said you were going to do, or you said you were going to do, and we want our $221,000 back. And PISMO's a basic position, and I agree with it, is that, look, if this goes sideways, we're all in it together. I think that that risk is really pretty nominal because the regional board is working on the scope. We're all going to be working on the scope together. So the approach and whether that approach is a good one or not, I think that that risk is pretty minimal. The second risk is we've agreed to a scope, but then we run out of the $221,000. And, you know, we need to put up some money in order to finish the work. Maybe that other $500,000 can come into it, or maybe the county says, no, we've allocated that for other groundwater modeling to help you guys out. And we all have to come up with some extra money in order to finish up that scope of work so that we don't have to pay the regional board back $221,000. Well, even if it's $100,000 more, which seems like that would just, you know, be impossible, we pay for 21% of the costs associated with the groundwater basin. And so even if it was another $100,000 on top of $221,000, our cost share is about $20,000. Not something that's going to break the bank. It's certainly worthy of the risk, and I think that's the outside. But I use that as an example because we just got the Prop 84 money, and we've been allocated about $20,000 to work on the same aspect of evaluating the groundwater basin and injection wells for the purpose of recycled water. So there's no action required right now on this groundwater modeling effort, but what I anticipate is to go back to the other agencies and say, okay, PISMO, you've indicated you need to have some coverage. You know, you need to have your risk mitigated on this next step of groundwater evaluations, and, you know, we think that's fair, but we need to do it through an agreement that's very focused on that instead of the broader letter of intent. And in the meanwhile, we want to have consideration for our contribution of the $20,000 in grant money that we're going to be contributing to the efforts through our Prop 84. So again, I think it's reasonable that in terms of additional groundwater evaluations, that if PISMO wants to see those types of reimbursement agreements or guarantees or sort of interagency agreements on that next step, it's a good move. And it's not, again, just because of the need to implement recycled water, but it's because of the need to understand our groundwater basin better than we understand it right now. We all know that we can look at the stipulations in the adjudication that says we have a right to pump 900 acre feet per year, and when we add that up to the rights that the stipulations provide for the three cities, they add up to 4,000 acre feet per year. And we all know that there's no way we can pump that quantity of water this year, and we couldn't pump that quantity last year or for the last several years. And what it then begs is part of the groundwater evaluations really needs to then move into this evaluation of how much can we pump, you know, without recycled water, how much can we pump during wet cycles, you know, can we pump that full amount that's identified in the stipulations? And then as the groundwater basin declines and we're in medium years in terms of rainfall, and then what about in dry years, right? So we all need to understand the groundwater basin better for those purposes, independent of recycled water. And so, again, I think that there's always some overlap, and to the extent that PISMO says we need, you know, something to take that next step and mitigate some of our risks, I think that that's a reasonable position that they take. And unless, you know, board members don't like that approach, we would just continue to work as we have been with the city on some of these issues and then come back at a later date with a specific agreement on that. I also want to touch on the question of costs. So the handout that I provided, and as Vice President Austin indicated, this is the part of the feasibility study that was commissioned for the sanitation district, so it's on their website. And it's the executive summary. And what I want to point to is just one table in here, and that is on page 1-7, and it's the cost summary table. And it has two different components to it. Phase one, which would simply be implementation of the project for PISMO's flows, and there's a variety of cost estimates in there under different scenarios, but they range from just under $25 million to just over $40 million. Now, the higher project includes piping in order to provide water to agriculture, and those are called the hybrids. So if we're just thinking about recharge for municipal purposes, then the cost range is much tighter. It's $25 million to $30 million, basically. But when we look at total annualized costs, when you capture capital cost O&M, these assume no grant revenues. So part of the work effort has got to be how do we get grant revenues and mitigate some of these costs. But even the PISMO project itself is going to have a $2.5 to $3 million per year cost implication. And if the idea is we're paying for 21% because that's our share of groundwater pumping through the stipulations, then our costs would be somewhere between, you know, $500,000 to $600,000 a year. Our rough budget is about $2 million a year. That's a pretty significant rate increase on just the PISMO project. When we look at the combined project and cost estimates that range from about $60 million to about $87 million, again, focusing on not talking about ag, then the range is tighter, of about $60 million to $67 million roughly. In that scenario, total annualized costs are about $7.2 million to $7.8 million, which would put our annual costs at something like $1.5 million if it was based, again, on the proportions of our groundwater pumping rights as it's currently identified in the stipulations. And, you know, the concept of paying another $1.5 million or so in order to firm up our groundwater pumping rights when we're already paying more than 50% of our water fund budget to buy state water and Lopez water is sort of like, okay, how that's not, those numbers don't really add up very well for Oceano. And so it gets back to the, you know, the observations that legal counsel was making is really what are our benefits going to be? One of the important things is that these additional efforts, especially the groundwater efforts, may help to, you know, identify and define the different levels of benefits. And we might find that, you know, Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach are willing to pay for a much higher percentage because they have greater water needs right now. The level of conservation that they've had to do during the drought has been significant. The discussions of moratoriums have been significant. And so as we go through the process, you know, hopefully we're going to be able to define what the different agencies' needs are. But it's hard to see us supporting the project at that same percentage of what we have in terms of our pumping rights. There's other details that are going to have to be addressed as well because Pismo Beach and Oceano both bring in state water. So to the extent that we're bringing in a foreign source of water from out of the area, and then that water goes in and augments the groundwater, that's something that we're doing. Yeah, that's a benefit to everybody above and beyond pumping groundwater, using it, and then trying to get that groundwater back in the ground again. Again, it illustrates the level of complexity in this project is it's actually pretty interesting and fascinating, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But I wanted to make sure to reference this cost allocation table and to give a general feel for the comparison to, you know, what our water fund is already looking like and what we fund. So that taken into the context also of we know that part of our work effort and our rates and charges, the one thing that's not getting funded right now is our capital improvement replacement program. And that really needs to be our focus in 2017. So the advocacy platform and the discussion on groundwater availability, groundwater evaluations is really to help move things forward. I think that the fiscal risks to the CSD in doing so on these next steps is really pretty nominal in comparison to what might be unintended consequences associated with the letter of intent. And the key here right now is, again, the advocacy platform. So with that, I would be glad to answer any questions.
A couple of things occur to me. First of all, I liked your opening comments about supporting Pismo Beach and their initiative in these regards. That's certainly something that we can do. It's a non-economic item and certainly capable of being done by us. The other thing, the letter of intent basically says the contributions would be based on the benefits received. There's another principle that might apply here, and that would be the need. Certainly among our group, some people need the reclaimed water much more than others. And that would be a legitimate basis for evaluating the degree of contribution.
I agree.
And, of course, it's an advantage to us because we don't need the water as much as some of our other partners here.
So without jumping into too much details, one of the approaches that could be addressed there is when you look at the total cost of a project, you can say, look, at certain cost components need to get paid, and everybody needs to pay a certain percentage of those. What those percentages are, or whether they match up with our pumping rights right now or not, but you know, there's common that certain fixed percentages need to be applied. But when you have other things like needs and how much are the different agencies actually pumping out of the groundwater basin, then you might say that other components of costs are going to be based on maybe like a five-year rolling average of actual and real pumping, right? Because then that's reflective of a need.
Right.
And so that type of detail on addressing different fiscal options on how to make this project happen haven't occurred yet. But that is, you know, one of the concepts that can be discussed in terms of talking about benefits versus needs.
And it could be easily included in the letter of intent. The degree of the participation is based on need and benefit.
Yeah. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to refrain from tonight trying to edit the letter of intent because there's so much in it, you know. And so
there is.
I think that the next immediate needs are the sanitation district's involvement in the supplemental EIR, and all of us working together to make sure the groundwater evaluations are getting done. And then after we know more information, whether there's an agreement for initial effort, a modified letter of intent or something, we'll see how that works out. But the basic idea is let's move forward with the next steps right now. Let's just table the letter of intent for the time being until some of the unknowns are sorted out.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think this is a very good approach, as we want to encourage the efforts that are being done. But as you've, you know, said, as far as we really want to make sure that we're being, you know, prudent with our own resources and what we're setting ourselves up for the future. So being advocates here for the efforts, I think, is it's a good direction.
Simple question. The groundwater evaluation, is that going to morph also into the Napomo area of the basin? I thought I read that it was.
Yes. The supplemental environmental program funds for reclaimed water are going to be specifically to the RGSP. And so that's really not going to have, as best as I understand right now, any implications associated or evaluations associated with the MESA. But the other $500,000 that's been set, including the $250,000 that the county is allocating, will incorporate the MESA. That's part of sort of the conditions of the county, is that if they're going to contribute the funding, then we're going to look at both the NCMA and the NMA portions of it. Obviously, we're going to dig into more detail again in the NCMA area, especially through the SEP funds. But the entire, and some of that work effort is actually going on right now, which is also why we needed to pull the GSI invoice to make sure we really understand what GSI is invoicing us for. And so we have these boundary issues. How is the water flowing from the MESA to the Northern Cities management area? And what GSI has specifically been doing is looking at the water, groundwater contouring maps that have been produced off the mesa, and working with, I think his name is Steve Bachman, and he's been doing the contouring on the mesa. And Paul Sorensen and GSI have been doing contouring in the NCMA area. And so those two individuals have been meeting to try to coordinate their work efforts so that that boundary issue between the mesa and NCMA is better known. Another example that we anticipate the bigger groundwater evaluations is what's the recharge influence of Los Barros Creek, because it does come down through the boundaries. There's been some discussions from the mesa that they think that the Los Barros Creek is the primary recharge to create the divide between the mesa and the NCMA. And, of course, with the drought and not much recharge happening, then you know, how much of the boundary issues are influenced by pumping versus how much of it's been influenced by the drought. So we are seeking to make sure to understand the relationships between the two management areas through the groundwater modeling efforts.
It's just that they're going to need water also.
Up on the mesa?
Up on the mesa. When they put another 1,000 houses up there,
well,
they need water. And I just see these costs for this reclaimed water, and I think, can't we expand it into an even larger area where there's more revenue, because they have the same, I want to know if they're going to have this, if their water is our water, and they're going to have, if they're pumping out of the same area, then they have the same need, they should pay for part of this too.
And so,
I mean, I'm making the whole issue more complicated.
Well, President White, I think you've hit a nail on a head on a certain specific detail, and that is in wet cycles, for example, the NCMA portion of the groundwater basin is relatively shallow as compared to the mesa. You know, they sit up at a higher elevation, and they're on top of a huge sand dune that holds a lot of water. We're down at a lower elevation, and our groundwater basin is going to fluctuate more. Well, in wet cycles, and there's a report I read many years ago regarding Lopez. Whether this is true or not, I don't know, because with urban development, groundwater recharge changes. But the very old report had a statement in there that the engineers were estimating that once we've had enough rain in order to get Lopez Dam to spill, we've had enough rain for the groundwater basin in the La Cienega Valley, is what it was referring to recharge. Well, if that continues to be true today, and we've gone through a rain cycle, and our groundwater basin is recharged, well, where is the recycled water going to go then? And that's really then, in a theoretical sense, that's the best opportunity to move some of that recycled water up to the mesa, where they have much more storage capabilities. Yet the ability to say to the mesa, you need to pay for some of this water, is easier said than done. And those then start becoming issues associated with the adjudication, and is there sufficient evidence to go to the judge and talk about those kind of issues. And even in open session, I hesitate about talking too much about them, because they, are part of adjudication. But
well, I know, it just seems like logically the larger, I mean, the more people you have to support an area, to support the project.
And I think the best way to summarize it is that there's opportunities there.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah. One of the things I think we want to be cautious about, and I know that everybody is sensitive about, you know, development and housing when there's water constraints up there. But the other side is the level of agricultural pumping. There's significant agricultural pumping going up on the mesa. So we don't want to shoot too many areas in one direction. We might need to just shoot a whole bunch of arrows everywhere up there.
No, I just use that as kind of an example, because Oh, yeah. And growth of ag up there, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more greenhouses and there's more strawberries.
But I love those strawberries.
Yeah. And those roses in those greenhouses are gorgeous, too. Anyway, thank you. Is anything else?
No, I think we're all in agreement.
We town agreement, do we, how do we take a vote? Well, we have to have public comment. And I will call for public comment. Julie Tacker again, and a couple of things. With the $221,000 and the $500,000, the county and Zone 3's contribution to the modeling effort, I don't hear, I've asked a couple of times at the Sand District, what is PISMO's contribution to that modeling effort? The Sand District's, through the Water Board, is three of the four NCMA partners, so I would like to know what that is, or if they're forgiven because they already have $1.5 million invested in their side of the project. And let's not kid ourselves. This is PISMO's project, and PISMO is PISMO first. This is about PISMO. Phase one is front-loaded for PISMO, and even the pipes are bigger in the construction for PISMO for you to come on later, or the Sand District flows to come on later. With regard to the letter of intent, just so you know, Grover Beach sent it back to staff, said continue to work with PISMO on massaging the language. They weren't ready to sign. Arroyo Grande changed the language slightly to say that the costs would be, and I don't have the exact language, to be determined. So costs clearly is what is the main concern, and Grover Beach even characterized it as perhaps a blank check. So I'm glad that your staff is saying let's not go into this because of the unknown costs. Concerns I have for Oceano, clearly, you don't need the water, and you could go the rest of your existence without it, the way you're set up. The concerns I have for the sanitation district are, Sand District is not a purveyor. All they need to do is treat wastewater. If somebody wants them to treat water to the level of recycling, that becomes a purveyor issue. PISMO, Grover, Arroyo, Oceano are all purveyors. So because you as a purveyor are not needing that water, maybe you don't participate at all. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I worry that the Sand District shouldn't pay anything for an environmental impact report. This is, they're not going to benefit from the water. They're going to get the work. So that's a concern I have for them. There's my time. There's lots more. I hope you actually either watch the presentation that Sand District had or have WSC here to explain it to your board, because I think you'd have a larger picture.
Thank you.
Mary Lucy Oceano. I don't like the word advocacy. So when you rework it or decide on whether you're going to do an MOU or how you're going to collaborate with PISMO, I think the word advocacy means you have absolutely zero power. So if you use different terminology, I think that that would probably help. But you're going to table that issue. So. I'm glad you mentioned the groundwater pumping, because Oceano has allocated 900 acre feet of groundwater, and we get 750 acre feet from the state water. And so when the threat, the fabricated story of saltwater intrusion came about, Oceano made the ethical decision to stop pumping the groundwater basin, and that meant that we donated 900 acre feet per year to our neighbors so they can continue pumping, because we had diversified our water portfolio. So that comes out to, I don't know, $387,000 that Oceano contributes per year to the groundwater basin. I had it here a second. It's about 387. Because you got to figure it's about $340 per acre foot. I mean, yeah, per acre foot to pump. We're not pumping. We could pump 900 acre feet. So it's about $387,000. So this is where I get a little mad with the county. Not mad, but just annoyed, right? Is that here we have an unincorporated area that has minimal water resources up on the mesa, right? The county, it's an unincorporated area, county responsibility, and they contribute a measly $250,000. When Oceano's been contributing 900 acre feet, they've been in overdraft for numerous years. You know, we've contributed millions to NCMA, you know, keeping control of that, and now they're going to give us $250,000 to contribute to the groundwater characterization. Not that you have any authority or any power, but the numbers just don't seem to click with me. If we're contributing 900 acre feet, $250,000, come on now. You know, so I also think that we bring something to the table when it comes to the Pismo project. One, I'll never minimize collaboration, coalition building. We're not going to get through life by ourselves isolated. So the better we work with our neighboring surrounding areas, the healthier everybody is. And we have to figure out what is the value of being a DAC community, because that's what we bring to the table. Nobody else can bring that classification to the table. But Oceano, unfortunately, can bring that to the table. Yes, I hear the gap.
Thank you, Mary. Anyone else? Seeing no one. So we need action tonight.
Yes, and, yes. You know, good questions from the public again, and I think that those are some of the details that are going to be needing to be addressed as we move forward. So, you know, the recommendation is for approval of one. On the agenda, you can also approve the letter of intent, but we're basically recommending you just table that for the time being. On the exhibit, though, which is that water resource advocacy platform, I do have one recommended change, and it's right there in that first sentence. I think I was a little bit optimistic on the rainfall, because it says the Board of Directors acknowledges the severity of California's recent drought as opposed to current drought. We're not out of it yet, so I'm recommending that we just make that one word change from recent to current, and then, you know, recommend approval.
Do I hear a motion?
Well, I'd like to make a motion that we approve the water resource advocacy platform presented tonight and table the letter of intent.
And on the advocacy platform with the one-word amendment?
With the one-word amendment from recent drought.
To current drought.
To current drought.
I'd second that.
All in favor? Or does that need to be a roll call? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5-0. Thank you.
My final quick remarks on that is that, you know, as we discussed on both of them, if we're good fortune and the rain comes down and the lake fills up and the groundwater basin fills up, all of this work still needs to be done. The complexities associated with a project like this can take quite some time. And I think that's why next steps and just maintaining diligence on continuing to take the next steps, because we've seen a lot of different projects in this county, throughout the state, that the implementation isn't measured in years, but it's measured in decades. And sometimes that final decision is made when the situation gets bad again. So it's really hard to predict how this is going to go, but we just need to continue to work on the details. And I appreciate the board's support on this item.
have a question too, just with all the individuals that you do work with in the different communities surrounding this. Do you feel that most have that similar intention, that even with rain, like this rainstorm that's come, that, you know, we still, do you do that positive?
Yeah, sort of? I cannot think of a single individual who doesn't take that point of view.
Good.
Yeah. If they did, they'd probably need to move to another state, you know.
Okay. And the letter of intent, we're just going to?
Table it. Yeah, and that was part of Vice President Austin's motion.
Checking.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll continue to work with them as Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach are making edits and stuff, and we'll talk. But
okay. Thank you. So we move on to a review of the district's budget status as of December 31st and the approval of a lighting fund budget adjustment in the amount of $3,300 from reserve.
And this one, Ms. Cassiola, our business and accounting manager, will lead the discussions on.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam President and Board. I'm here to go over the quarter two budget review. I noted some things in the staff report, but I'm also going to reference back to some of the budget worksheets, and I'm going to kind of go fund by fund, starting admin, water, sewer, and then garbage. So on the staff report, I noted a couple items that we also had in quarter one that were front-loaded, so paid at the beginning of the fiscal year. Two that were related to admin were the local agency formation commission expense and the PERS UAL, which is unfunded liability, and that's related to fire and admin. So those were both front-loaded, and we won't be paying any more towards them, and that's why they're at 100%. Another expense that has come in a little bit higher than we would expect is the information technology expense in admin, which is line 221 in the admin. And this is due to we recently bought a new server and router because things were slowing down, and we had to pay for the labor to install those. We've also been looking at taking some of the older computers in the office and sending them over to Tony at the yard to speed up their computer system. So those might also increase some expenses, but that is nothing out of the ordinary. We also, in facilities, we recently had to tent the sheriff's building for termites, and that was just a one-time incurred cost, so there won't be any reoccurring cost with that. Another expense that came in a little bit higher was the lighting. We recently replaced a couple lighting and sensors on Front Street in December because they were out and it's been getting dark later. And back in August, we had increased the equipment replacement in the lighting budget to $6,600, and that's why we've come back to take half of that increase in for a budget adjustment to cover those costs. So we can continue to replace lights and sensors on Front Street. So then on the admin budget worksheet, there are a couple items I wanted to point out.
And Carrie, what page number is
that? I'm on agenda item 8B7 of 29. So it'd be admin budget expenditure worksheet. So the three items I'd like to point out are...
Let's give board members a chance to get there real quick. On the left, bottom left, it's also page 47 of 69 for the entire agenda
total
package.
Can I actually ask a quick question?
Sure.
Regarding the lighting, was that like bulbs that were changed or...?
Yeah, they're LED bulbs and then the sensors that flicker on when...
Well, and also, you know, the big ornamental.
Right.
We've been replacing some of those as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and hopefully the LED will last longer.
Yeah, so
be
those
more efficient.
Right. So we didn't have LED before.
The older ones, but now when we replace them, we use the LED.
Okay. Okay.
We also probably have some standards out there that need some work. You know, they're the kind of artistic concrete ones, and some of them have been beat up by some kids or drunk adults, maybe, I don't know, but
life.
If you can imagine that.
Yeah. So on the administrative budget expenditure worksheet, there's three items. The communication dispatch, which is expense item 110, clothing, which is 100, and then the outside UB mailing expense. And this, these increases in the admin fund are because we've been refining our cost codes, and we've been coding them all to admin instead of just, we used to break them out into admin, water, and sewer. So now they're just in admin, and they will later be, they'll be distributed through the admin allocation at the end of the year. So that's why they're front-loaded here, because once you combine all the amounts budgeted within the admin, water, and sewer, we are under budget almost. So that's what's going on there, and that's why they stand out.
I think on admin also the the outside utility mailing expense?
Yeah.
Is also, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So on that one, total with water, sewer, and admin, it's, I think, $19,500 budgeted, and we've only used $6,300. Like, you know, so that's what's going on. And then, so with water, items that were front-loaded were our membership expense with a CRWA.
What page are you on now?
Sorry, I'm back to the staff. But you can also see that on water, which would be agenda item 8B, 21 of 29. And that's line item 180, memberships.
Got it.
So you can see we're at 100%. And that's just an item that's front-loaded at the beginning of each fiscal year. And so there won't be any reoccurring costs there. Also, our water supply from Lopez, that's line item 261. That's also a front-loaded, so it's at 99%, and it won't increase. Other items that stick out would be the water meter expense, and that's only because Tony doesn't respect the budget. Just kidding. He does. I remind him every day. He does. But he has some on hand.
I wish the camera would go to Tony right now, because he is about as red as a strawberry from the Mesa.
No. He has some at the yard, and he's well aware. But another item was 171, which is maintenance to vehicles, and that's because we budgeted those expenses into the equipment fund. And so they've just been coded into water when really we've budgeted $6,500 in equipment to cover that. So that's well under budget.
So we're going to do a journal entry in order to move that cost to the equipment fund.
Okay. Yeah. Other items that stick out are line item 222, contract engineering, and 226, engineering and reimbursements. And when we pulled the detail for this, we noticed some items are related to sewer, so that will, and sewer laterals. So that will help out when we re-journal those into the sewer fund. We also have $40,000 in contingencies in water, which can help out with soft costs for engineering. And next meeting, we will have to come back, Pablo mentioned, with the reimbursement agreement from the county for the drainage project, which is line item 349, and so there'll be a budget item to address that.
So let's pause for a second in order to talk about our engineering costs. We're seeing a lot of reimbursable engineering expenses, and even though they're going well over the $10,000 estimate, the key is that they're reimbursable. So we'll get revenues from, you know, we have already gotten the deposits. But when we close out the deposits and we record the revenues and we give the refund of whatever the excess deposit was. So the reimbursable revenues, even though they go over the expenditure line item, we're going to have revenues to cover it. The overall status of contract engineering in the water fund, as Carrie had mentioned, is some of these costs need to be journal entered over to wastewater. So we're basically on track with the basic contract engineering. But where we're seeing the additional engineering costs are on the two county projects, the drainage project and the Air Park Drive. And I just want to sort of repeat what Carrie had mentioned, which is that on those soft costs that we're covering up front, the contingencies were set up in order to cover those costs. When we come back with the agreement with the county, then we need to do the budget adjustment for the costs that we're going to need to pay to the counties and their contractor. We've been watching what's been going on with the contract engineering really closely to make sure that things are lining up where they are. And then we're going to get to the sewer fund. But again, there's three different components of contract engineering. The basic contract engineering, and that's tracking with the budget pretty closely. There's the reimbursable, and that's over, but we get revenues to cover it. And then there's the two county projects, and that is a direct hit on us. The upfront, we've got covered by the contingencies, but we will need a budget adjustment for the actual construction and the dollars that we have to pay for the county. And again, that will be on the next agenda.
Thank you. Discussion?
Keep going. We've got a little bit more.
Yeah, just a little more. Sorry.
You paused too long.
Okay.
Sewer fund.
So then in the staff report I mentioned in the garbage utilities, the it looks as though we are spending more in postage, and that's because Cody goes out and actively posts items, and we have to certify and mail those notices to the customers to let them know they need to clean that up. So that's why mail is higher, or postage. And then also our utilities, we noted here on, sorry, it's page 29 of 29 on the item 29. So line item 290 is where we had the cleanup week invoice go to from the garbage company, and that was the September cleanup week. And we had a budget adjustment that was approved on 11-9 by the board, and so that took care of that. And that's why it looks higher. So that's all for the garbage.
On sewer fund, did you have any final comments on
sewer fund?
And that is, overall on the sewer fund, it's good. The one unanticipated expense, it was we had to do a bunch of work on basin. The crews had to go in there. Associated with Old Avocado Ranch. That's New Avocado Ranch? Old? New Avocado Ranch. The project that Trumpeter has that he purchased from
O'Connor,
yeah. So they had to tie into an existing manhole, and while we're doing that evaluation, we found that the line coming out of the manhole and down the street had a belly in it. And it's really flat. And so we needed to get DPSI out here to do some surveying in order to make sure that we had the vertical dimensions in order to fix that. And as it turned out, yes, we did. And Tony and the guys were able to go in there and essentially lift that belly up and modify it and take care of it. But we had to make sure to get DPSI and their surveyors out there because what we called tolerances, you know, how much room do you actually have to work with, were extremely tight. So that's the one project. And then I think you remember we also rebuilt the one lateral right there on Basin Street. It was a property owner who came a couple months ago and, you know, expressed his gratitude at the board for us doing that. And that's a direct result of the policy decision that we're going to continue to maintain laterals. So those were some of the unanticipated expenses in the sewer fund. But even with the cost reallocation that Carrie had talked about, we're still going to be within the overall budget for the sewer fund.
Where is that basin?
Basin Street.
Basin Street?
Yeah, so right off of...
Right off L Street, and the other cross street would be 25th.
Okay, I'll have to go look.
Over by Mark, down, turn right.
Yeah, but that's not the one right against Elm Street, that great big one. I thought that belonged to Roy Grandy.
Close to that basin in the
Oh, okay.
It is really close to that, yes.
Yeah, okay, I thought I was in the right zone. Thank you. Yeah. Public comment, please.
Julie Tacker again, and I just had a question on the other financial considerations that are at the last page of your staff report before you get into the actual meat of your budget. The question I had was, because I haven't heard in a long time, an update on the emergency generator project. And I'm curious about the use of public facilities fees for that. Has the county kind of signed off on the use for that? Because I understood the public facilities fees were related to new development and serving the new customers. And this is a repair of a piece of equipment that you already have or replacement of it. So I just wondered if that's been sort of signed off or if there's been any consultation with the county on the use of those funds.
Mr. Ogren?
On the emergency generator and that question specifically, sort of there's a two-part answer to that. One is that, yes, I have gone through some of the historical correspondence and found some indication from the county that they were fine with the use of the public facilities fees for the emergency generator project, to the extent, of course, that it's for support of the fire department operations. But the second part of the question really is we have to come back and take some resolutions to your board with findings and lay out a plan on what are we going to use those public facilities fees for specifically. So, you know, globally, yes, I found the correspondence. And in some respects, the county is, you know, they're going to go, we don't approve that. We expect you to comply with, you know, the legal requirements on how you use this funding. But it's also acknowledged that with the public facilities that you have a little bit of flexibility. Certainly, it's collected from new development, but it can also be used on equipment. And one of the thoughts is, well, at Five Cities Fire Authority, they're replacing a lot of equipment. You know, they're buying new fire engines. So, yes, I have gotten some concurrence from the county. It's really findings and determinations by your board, and we have to come back and we have to adopt basically a facilities plan in order to make sure that we address all the legal requirements associated with public facilities fees. And I would anticipate doing that in the near future. The other issue associated with getting the emergency generator project out the door, because the electrical engineering design is basically done. Gary Taylor is on board to help us with getting it out to bid. And your board adopted the California Uniform Cost Accounting Act, Construction Cost Accounting Act, which provides the procedures to go through informal bidding. And so Nicole is currently in the process of then, of right now, near future, making sure that we understand exactly what we need to do in order to do the informal bidding on what are essentially electronic boards. We take our project, we post it on an electronic board that is pre-designated by the commission and through those manuals, and then when we do that, then we're complying with the act. So Nicole's researching, making sure that we have, you know, all those detailed steps. Your board already adopted the resolution and the ordinance, so we've got a little bit more staff work to do, and there'll be some subsequent actions, but you know, that's lined up to move forward in early 2017.
Comments, questions? Need to entertain a motion? Approve the lighting fund budget adjustment? Please?
I'll make a motion to approve the budget adjustment in the amount of $3,300 from the lighting fund equipment replacement reserve.
I'll second that.
Roll call. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Passes 5-0. Okie dokie, can we move on in the agenda? Utility items? Doesn't appear there's any hearing items. Received written communication.
I mentioned the Habitat for Humanity item and that they just emailed us.
Late received communications. And it does not appear we have a closed session item tonight. Future agenda items.
And I am frantically looking for my cover sheet again because I have some notes on it for future agenda items. As I mentioned, so next meeting in 2 weeks, the agreement with the county regarding the Highway 1 drainage project is going to be on the agenda. Next week as well, closed session item for my midterm evaluation.
Okay.
Which, of course, we start talking about what should Pablo's goals be in 2017. And then the subsequent meeting is when we come back and talk about the district goals overall. I know that there was...
Do we expect any action on your advocacy letter for the next meeting, or would that be later?
I think that would be later.
Okay, thank you.
Nothing immediate.
Anything else? Future hearing items?
Not in the immediate. In 2017, we have to do our audit and update to the sewer system management plan. That's every 2 years. Yeah, it's back at us again. So that will be agenda items and a hearing item in the future. But
okay. It looks like we've completed our business for the evening. Could I get an adjournment from someone?
I'll make a motion that we adjourn.
Second it.
Meeting adjourned.